With Linda. I'm Linda Davis, and I want to thank you for joining me today. Just a little about me before we get started. I love Jesus, I love coffee, and I love sharing both. So go grab your cup and let's talk. Today, I want us to jump into what it really takes to be a true leader, to really lead how God intended you to lead. I think one of the biggest points of being a true leader is understanding, accepting, I would even say embracing, and standing tall in the fact that only you can do what God called you to do, how He called you to do it. Think about that. Only you can do what God called you to do, how He called you to do it. Now, other people can do what you can do. Other people can step in if you refuse. God will use the willing vessel. He'll move along to the next person, so to speak, if you refuse to be obedient and step into what He's really called you to do. But no one else will genuinely be able to do it the way God would have done it, performed it, accomplished it through you. Only you can do you. You know, there's impersonations out there. And people can impersonate, like comedians, you know, some of them are known because they can do good impersonations. Truthfully, one of my sons does a great job impersonating Donald Trump. But is he really Donald Trump? Does he actually really sound like him? No. He sounds like my son impersonating Donald Trump very good. Another one of my sons, boy, he can do the voice of Batman really good. Now, when he's sitting here doing that, are we fooled into thinking he's Batman? Do we get confused thinking he's Batman? No. We know it's our son doing a really good job impersonating Batman, but he's not quite him. Hopefully that helps to make the point. Only you can do you. I can try and mimic somebody's behavior. You know, like my kids even, you know, they have some of my mannerisms. They have some of my husband's mannerisms. Even our features, you know, they have some of his features, some of mine. But they're still not us. They're a portion of us, but they are not us. So we have to really understand that. We can only do what God has called us to do in the way that God desires it to be done. That's why He's calling us. That's why He's calling you. That's why He's calling me. That's why our callings are different, maybe, but also similar. Because we have something in us that desires, that God desires the way of it to be done. Like I touched on just a few minutes ago, if we're not willing, if we refuse, God will use someone else. Yes, absolutely, He most definitely will. because in the long run, he's not going to deny his people what he's trying to bring them. But this is both humbling and overwhelming all at the same time. You, me, we are the ones that he has for a specific purpose. He has something that he's already placed in us that we're now carrying, that he desires us to bring to a specific person or people. And I would go so far with regard to the obedience of stepping in, the obedience of walking the sacrifices that will be required of you to be you, if that makes sense. Don't force someone else into your spot. And don't fit into someone else's spot, because that's what other people have for you. Have you ever been in a situation where someone has told you, this is what I see you doing? And even though you know you can do that, and maybe you can even do that pretty good, that's not what God has shown you about you, then don't let yourselves be squished into that box. It's kind of like, okay, say, you know, we'll put it in a sports analogy. Say somebody is really good at dribbling a basketball, and they have really good visual perception, and they do good reading defenses. They're really good. Like, that's where they feel comfortable. That's where they flow. They've worked at it for years. They know this is what they want to do. It's where they've been productive even. It's where they've seen fruit. And then maybe they get to high school, maybe even junior high, and that doesn't quite fit into the coach's plans. Maybe he has somebody else that's a good point guard. That's a point guard. And he sees some talent and he wants to use you. Let's say this is you. So instead, he makes you a shooting guard. That's kind of close, but not really. It's kind of the same thing, but not really. So even though you can fill that position and you can do it decent, both you and the coach, and I'll even say the whole team, is missing out on the fact that actually your natural ability is to be the point guard. And that's what happens sometimes. We're just a little bit off. We're positioned just a little bit to the side of what God really has for us. Can we carry it? Yes. Can we even do it with excellence? Yes. Are people changed and touched? Are we impacting? Yes. But it's not the same. It's not the same as if we had been in the exact placing, the exact calling, the exact destiny that we were supposed to be in. So don't force someone else into your spot. Don't allow someone to force you into a spot. And don't force yourself into someone else's spot. I mean, the best biblical example I can think of is Moses. Of course, we have the hindsight, which is always an advantage. of looking back on the whole life of Moses and seeing that he was clearly called to lead the people of Israel. But he didn't know that. He didn't understand the vastness of that, even when he was out in the wilderness, even when he looks over and there's a burning bush. Now, to me, I've always said this, of course, not being in the situation myself, it's a lot easier to assume what I would do. But I would think if I looked over and saw a burning bush and the angel of the Lord was talking to me through that bush, that whatever the bush, by the way, that was not being consumed by the flames that were burning it, I have always thought and even said I would listen with a yes to everything that bush had to say. So Moses doesn't quite do that. Completely amazing when you think about it. But what we have to understand about a true leader is that every single person has failure in their way to be built up to leadership. And so we really ought to take a critical eye off of everyone else around us, truthfully, and just have God show us us. It's always so easy to look at everybody else and say, well, I think you should have done this. I would have done that. I don't think you should have done this. I would have handled it this way. Well, you don't know because you weren't in that exact situation. Now, can we look biblically and see what the do's and don'ts are? Sin? Yeah, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about handling of situations in the moment that really resulted in a lack or resulted in a failure. And then looking back, most leaders see that. Most leaders know that. Hopefully, because that's where we grow as leaders. I think that's the toughest thing about failing or missing something or being off step, is to look at ourselves face to face, I guess, if you can say that, standing in the mirror with ourselves. So here we come with Moses. And of course, you know, prior to that, Joseph was doing amazing things for the Pharaoh. And then, you know, time passes and Joseph passes away and the Pharaoh passes away and a whole new Pharaoh comes to power and he oppresses the Israelites. And they've been oppressed for years. And the Israelites just continue, regardless of the oppression, to multiply through the favor of God. And so this evil Pharaoh orders the Hebrew midwives to kill all the newborn male babies so they don't become so strong they can overtake them. Which, of course, this is the desperate time that Moses is born. For a specific period in time, he is born. And so this mother, protecting her child, I believe being led by God, hides him, and then she puts him in a basket when it's time and sends him down the Nile River, to which he survives, by the way. And Pharaoh's daughter finds him. This is our Moses, right? And she adopts him as her own. And so a point in time comes when Moses is grown, that something begins to stir in him. And he's understanding, I really don't think I'm of this family. I really don't think that this is it. Now, he could have ignored those unctionings. He could have completely ignored them and stayed in his palace of comfort, his life of luxury. But something in him just would not let him do it. And so now he kills a Hebrew man And he runs away because he's scared. And he ends up out in the desert for 40 years. And now we come to the burning bush. And so, like I said earlier, the burning bush catches his attention. And he turns aside to see the great sight. So let's go to Exodus for a moment. I want to call up the word with this. And let's see where this burning bush starts. It's in, of course, the beginning of Exodus because it's about the Exodus of the Israelites. So in chapter 3 of Exodus. Oops, sorry about that. I dropped a paper dropped out of my Bible. But in Exodus chapter 3, the burning bush appears to Moses. And it does say, now Moses kept the flocks down at verse 1 of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian. And he led the flock to the back or west side of the wilderness and came to the mountain of God, Mount Sinai, even to Horeb. And the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire out of the midst of a bush. And he looked, and behold, the bush burned with fire, and the bush was not consumed. So he knew that this was something supernatural. It's what drew him over to see what was going on with the bush. And so God starts speaking to him. Do not come near, put your shoes off your feet, for the place on which you stand is holy ground. I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And Moses hid his face. So he knows that this is the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And he tells him, I've heard the cry of my people. I'm coming down to deliver them. The cry of the Israelites has come to me. And down in verse 10, he says, come now, therefore, and I will send you to Pharaoh that you might bring forth my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. This must have shocked Moses. He was probably all good with it until this sentence. Because now it's going to cost him. I mean, he had to have cocked his head to the right, like, say what? What did you just say? I'm all good with the burning bush. I'm all good with it not being consumed. I'm all good with it talking to me until you tell me I'm involved in a way that raises up fear and insecurity that I don't want to deal with. Moses is like, whoa, who am I that I'm going to go to Pharaoh? And you know in his heart, he did not want to go back there. He didn't want to do it. And God's like, I'm going to be with you. And by the way, this will be a sign to you that I've sent you. When you bring the people out of Egypt, bring them back here and serve them on, have them serve me on this mountain. And Moses is thinking, there's no way these people are going to believe me. I don't care. When God sends you, God sends you. Remember, only you can do you. Is all he had to believe was that God truly sent him to these people that had been crying out. They didn't even know it when he showed up. I mean, Moses' response is pure panic at this point. And he just starts coming up with one excuse after another. God says to Moses, after he asks, who shall I say sent me? I am who I am and what I am, and I will be what I will be. And say this to the Israelites, I am has sent me to you. And he gives them a whole game plan. He tells them the whole plan. And now at the end, he's going to give his people favor and respect in the sight of the Egyptians. They're going to be let go. And Moses answers, but. Now, how many times have we done this? We know it's God. We know he's stirring us. And our response is, but. I'm guilty. You've got to be guilty too. But we've got to get rid of the buts. The yeah, but. Yeah, but. I know, but they're not going to believe me. This is what spurred his question in the first place. They're going to say, you really didn't appear. And God's like, fine, let me help you out. What's that in your hand? A rod. Cast it on the ground. He does it, becomes a snake. Again, another amazing thing that to me, that'd be pretty convincing. But they did have soothsayers then. Well, you know, if you read on, we're probably not going to get that far today, but if you read on, you'd see that the magicians mimicked a lot of what Moses did. But there came a time where God said, nope, you can't do this. And only he could do it. And so the Lord gives him several more signs. For sake of time, I'm not going to get into the detail of all of the signs that he gave them. But he gives him several more signs. Moses basically is like, who, me? What? No, I don't think so. They're not going to listen to me. They're not going to follow me. By the way, I stutter. I'll be mocked for my speech. I'm not even going to be able to get the words out. I'm not going to release your commands. And then this is one of the key points I want to make to you. In chapter 4, verse 13, God's telling him, who's made man's mouth, or who makes the dumb or the deaf or the seeing or the blind? Have not I the Lord? Now therefore go, and I will be with your mouth, and I will teach you what you shall say. If he's sending us, he's got us. He already knows. He already knows the fear. He already knows the insecurity. He already knows the true weakness. But he's also saying only you can do you. He's also saying, I need you to do it in the way that you're going to do it, that because that's what I desire to be done. I have you for this specific purpose. And so to that, Moses responds in verse 13, after all this, after all the signs, I pray you send by the hand of someone other whom you will send. In other words, please don't use me. That's what Moses is telling God. That's what Moses is telling the burning bush. That's what Moses is telling the rod that got changed into the serpent. That's what Moses is telling the hand that became leprosy, and then God healed it. Use someone else. I just saw you do all these amazing things, but I don't think you can straighten the words of my mouth out. I pray you send by the hand of some other whom you will send. In each excuse that Moses came up with up till this point, God has a comforting, encouraging response, and he'll do the same with us. Basically, you can do this. Basically, I've called you. I know. I've got you. I created you. I know your weaknesses, and I'm still asking you. Tell them I sent you. Tell the elders, and I'm promising you, if you'll just do this, they will believe and obey your voice, basically is what God says, and I'm paraphrasing. Moses still wavers after all of that. He's overwhelmed, and he can't get beyond his fear, his insecurity, what he's seeing in the natural, what he knows to be of himself. And it has always stood out to me that Moses refused to trust that God would really put the words in his mouth after God said he would. Moses' refusal to stand fully in his place caused Aaron to be used for something God never intended Aaron to be used for. But he did it. And he did it to show Moses he was the one for the job. God took away, because Moses gets to the point where he begins speaking in front of Pharaoh. He gets to the point, obviously, right? He comes down from the mountain delivering the word of the Lord to the Israelites. So he eventually overcomes this fear and steps into his place. God took away every excuse Moses had except this one. He didn't take this one away. What he was saying with this one was, trust me. Can you trust me in this one place? God actually ends up sending Aaron into the wilderness to meet Moses. And when Moses and Aaron return to Egypt, Aaron is for sure the one that speaks out. But something happens over time. And we see Moses is the one standing confidently in front of Pharaoh, making the demands for freedom for the Israelites. He stepped into the boldness and the confidence of his calling, because it was his, not Aaron's. Aaron helped escort Moses to position. But there was a point for Moses to step up and do what God intended him and him alone to do. That's pretty powerful. Let's not ever miss that. How faithful of God to say, okay, Moses doesn't quite see this, so I'm going to bring Aaron in, and I'm going to let Aaron step in that place momentarily until Moses sees it. And then a shift takes place somewhere in there where Moses, maybe it's in the middle of Aaron first speaking when he's realizing, my goodness, maybe he got sick to his stomach. We don't know. But something in him told him, Aaron is not supposed to be doing that. I am. And in the end, hindsight, we all know Moses and the Israelites were victorious and God's promise was fulfilled. So I want to close with this morning. Don't try to be Aaron where you are supposed to be Moses. And on the flip side of that, don't try to be Moses where you are supposed to be Aaron. Let me say that one more time. Don't try to be Aaron where you are supposed to be Moses. And on the flip side, don't try to be Moses where you are supposed to be Aaron. Remember how we started this out. Only you can do you.